Coaching it's based in therapeutic strategies like acceptance and commitment therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy. So it's about like skills acquisition and then practice.
Yeah.
Because you need to practice doing things differently in order to have a different experience.
All right, everyone. So first off, I completely bombed this episode when it came to my own audio. So please excuse it sounding like I'm speaking out of a radio from the 1930s. It sounds like this on this episode and on one other one. It's not that bad, but I wanted to warn you. This episode is on a very important topic because there is so much divide between therapists and coaches. And on social media, you see a lot of people bagging on coaches as if they're all terrible. And that's just not the case. We're all human beings and we all deserve to understand more of the nuance within any healing profession. And that's why in this episode, I'm talking with a mental health coach who's going to spill the truth about her profession and how it can, and when it can't, help you. Alisa has worked in the mental health field since 2010. She has her master's in mindfulness-based transpersonal counseling psychology from Naropa University, a Buddhist-inspired school, in 2014, and became a national board-certified health and wellness coach in 2021. She's passionate about helping people to live a more mindful and intentional life, focusing on healthy relationships, as these are key determinants of overall wellness and happiness. In her free time, she loves to rock climb, see live music, and bake. We are diving into the biggest mental health problem Alisa thinks humans face, and it's not what you'd think. We discuss how coaches should be tackling subclinical subjects with clients and what that even means. And we're giving you some signs of a good coach, because you deserve to know. If you like it, please share it on socials and don't forget to subscribe. Enjoy. Alisa Burdick, thank you so much for coming on the Human First podcast. How are you today?
I'm so excited and glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We're talking about something that's so important. And before we get into that, going off the title of the podcast, Human First, what makes you you? Tell me about Alisa as a human.
Sure. The first thing that comes to mind is like, oh, I'm complex.
Right?
Which I think is something that I've, you know, really come to terms with, is that life is not simple. I'm not a simple person. I have so many different layers. So, I mean, at the surface, I'm 35. I live in Western Mass. I love plants. I rock climb. I love to cook and bake. But it's also like I have a lived experience from healing from trauma. I grew up with a lot of ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences. And I've had quite the journey working in the mental health field, you know, as someone with lived experience. And so I've gone through a lot, and I'm just excited to be where I'm at now, especially talking to you about such an important topic, which is mental health coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. We can talk about ourselves and say things like we love plants and we love rock climbing. And, mm-hmm. and then we can say like, and we've also been really traumatized. And like, isn't that just like the course of human existence? In reality, there's these things that we like to do as hobbies. And then there's these things that we kind of carry around as like, yeah, if I'm going to talk about myself, I have to talk about this too. And like, it's just that like paradox of both and neither, and like, we're all somewhere in between. And so thank you for that.
Oh, of course. And I think something too is like, it's hard to open up sometimes, right? Especially about these vulnerable aspects. And something for me as like a mental health professional has been really not being sure what that line is. Right? Which I know is something that you work on as well. And I really love your vulnerability. And I want to kind of, you know, aspire to that level of openness, because it's something that we're trained to like, not do as therapists. Right? But now that I'm a coach, I'm like, I have a little bit more openness.
Right. Yeah. And that's so important. And I hope we get into that today.
Absolutely.
And I think we will. That must be part of your why, right? Like having like, growing up with ACEs. Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit, like just a little bit more about your why, like, why do you want to help other people?
Yeah. So I grew up with a high number of ACEs, which are, things like, you know, emotionally negligent or abusive parents. My father was an alcoholic. I didn't have a lot of emotional support. And so I struggled massively with my emotions and my mental wellness as a teenager and well into my 20s. And as soon as I could get myself help, I did. Because I think there was some part of me that just knew, like, it doesn't have to be this hard. there's people who do want to help me and people who do want to like love me the way that I deserve to be loved. And so I got myself into therapy as soon as I could. And I was a music major before I switched to psychology. And finally, once I got into studying psychology and started to really understand the human condition, understand more about my parents, really, and being able to see them as just traumatized humans who never had the opportunity to work through their shit.
Oh, please do.
But so deepening my understanding of just why my parents were the way that they were, why they treated me the way that I was treated, helped so much with my own healing and helped me to really understand other human beings as well. And so, you know, my struggles really closed me off to compassion and to connection, which is so relatable, right? When we can't connect with or love ourselves, we can't really be with other people either. And so once all that kind of got cleared away and I was able to have loving, supportive friendships and relationships and this longstanding supportive relationship with my therapist, I saw the light, you know, I realized, there is hope and healing. And I want to be a conduit for that for other people too.
It's such a fascinating experience that we go through as humans, where when we are lacking something during our development, a part of us believes that it will always be lacking forever. And then there's this other part of us that's like, but maybe not. It's like our brain wants us to believe that our current reality will always be our reality so that we can adjust to it, even if it's terrible. There's a part in each of us that does say that, but maybe not. And that's why we try. That's why we reach out to a therapist or to a coach or like pick up that book or listen to that podcast episode. It's like part of us knows that our reality can be better. Mm-hmm. And I love that that's part of what me and you do and all healers do is like when someone has that little inkling of possibility, like we're there for that, you know?
Yeah, let's grab onto that, you know, and really harness it. And I love it because it's innate. You know, I think all of us have this little part that says like, oh, but maybe it could be better. We might not fully believe it.
Right.
But the fact that the voice is there telling us that means that we have this innate ability or part of ourselves that wants to heal and wants to be better and wants to connect. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's something to grab onto.
It absolutely is. Earlier, right before we started recording, you mentioned that you just changed your Instagram bio upon wanting to talk about this episode and everything we're going to talk about in it today. And so let's start though, mental health coaching, what is it? And what does it mean when you say you do it?
So mental health coaching it's a very action-oriented approach that helps people improve their relationships with themselves and also their relationships with other people. So it's really a very direct way to help people reduce negative and unhelpful thought patterns, reduce stress and anxiety, and really improve their overall wellness. Coaching it's based in therapeutic strategies like acceptance and commitment therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, short-term solution-focused therapy, you know, like it's very evidence-based. Yeah. And I think the biggest differences between like mental health coaching and therapy is that coaching is goal-oriented. So like if you say you want to reduce your anxiety, great. Let's look specifically at how often are you experiencing anxiety during your week? What are the exact triggers for the anxiety? How do you react to it in the moment? Okay. And then asking, what do you know about anxiety? What do you know about how to respond instead of react? Mm-hmm. And then learning those skills that you just haven't learned yet. So it's about like skills acquisition and then practice.
Yeah.
Because you need to practice doing things differently in order to have a different experience. And the great thing about coaching is that or at least my coaching and, you know, well-trained coaches is we are very adept at seeing what stage of change a person is in. I know that as a therapist, I wasn't taught about the trans-theoretical stages of change. Mm-hmm. But it's so important to know where someone at, what is their readiness to start taking action to improve their situation. And so, you know, being able to even just feed that back to people and tell them, oh, well, it sounds like you're in the preparation stage. And right here is where we would learn about these things that you're wanting to work on. That's so empowering.
Right.
Because it's like, it just names what it is. And then you can hand over a useful tool. Education. Let's learn.
Right.
Take the next step.
Yeah. How many mental health coaches are out there in any like region or area you want to choose? Mm-hmm. How many exist today?
That is such a great question. And I would be curious about it. I did a little bit of research and I found that. So as of 2021, there were an estimated 128,000 health coaches in the United States. So I don't know how many of those are mental health coaches. I know there's a lot of, you know, health and wellness coaches, which maybe help with more kind of physical health based things. But if we take a step back, like, is physical health really separate from mental health? No.
No.
So I would posit that they're all mental health coaches.
Do you know how many therapists there are?
I did find that number. Yeah, it said there were over 198,000 therapists employed in the United States. So health coaches are certainly catching up.
Yeah.
And I also found that there's now over 5,000 national board certified health and wellness coaches. And I feel like that's important to mention because I know that one of the like critiques about coaching is that it's a very unregulated field, which it is in some ways, which is kind of like for better or for worse, but we do have some sort of regulation and standards. And those are upheld nationally by the National Board of Health and Wellness Coaches. So it's nice to see that more and more people are getting that credential to just give it a little bit more solid grounding.
Yeah. And I think it's so important that you mentioned that on this episode too, because I think people don't even know to potentially look for a coach that has certification or that has credentials to some degree. I really think that that's a huge missing piece when people are looking for help in general. They don't know what the licensure acronyms mean or what the certifications mean. And often we just go based off of the paragraph on the website and like having more informed consent of like, who is this person? What can they do is super important. And honestly, that's across the board. That's not just with coaches. I think therapists who like really emphasize and show their credentials and they like know their scope of practice and they don't say they specialize in everything. Like those types of therapists are the ones that are very critical of coaches. But like what I think those therapists don't realize is that like not all therapists are like that. Not all therapists really give informed consent and they do say that they can treat everything and they don't individualize and specialize. And sometimes coaches are even more specialized and niched down than some therapists are. And like therapists deal with even far more difficult and complex situations, you know, like schizophrenia or like catatonic psychosis. You're just like, yeah, just come on in, you know? And like, I typically work with depression, but come on in. Sure. So it's important. Yeah. That you mentioned that like, we all have to be very exploratory. Yeah. We need to discern and like know what we're doing. So thank you so much for that. So I've heard you say like therapist that like you've been were you a therapist turned coach?
Yeah. So my path, I started working in the mental health field in 2010, just kind of entry level counselor in like a respite home, but it was really excellent to get some ground level experience and exposure to the mental health world to see, is this something that I want to do?
Yeah.
And I decided absolutely. So I moved out to Colorado, got my master's degree at a Buddhist inspired school called Naropa University. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. And their motto is transform yourself, transform the world. Mm-hmm. And they held true to it. You know, it was a very transformative experience. And at the same time, like my degree is in mindfulness-based transpersonal counseling psychology.
Which sounds incredible to me. I know exactly what that means.
It is incredible. And like, it's not social work. I don't have a degree in social work. So it was a pretty rude awakening graduating and then going out into the field, being faced with, honestly, in Colorado, there weren't a lot of outpatient therapy positions even available. It was a lot of case management, which for those who don't know, that's like connecting people with services. And it's just kind of a lot of, it's more social work based.
Yeah.
versus what my degree is in, which is like depth-based psychology, really diving into a person's, you know, psyche and their values and their dreams and doing this deep work that is really, really transformative. And unfortunately, you know, it's not what a lot of people who are accessing community mental health are ready for. They need to build up their foundational levels of support, which is obviously important and not exactly what I was trained in. So I did work as a therapist briefly for like a county agency in Denver, and it was really, really rough. It was, you know, I was very underpaid, overworked.
Yeah.
And I landed then in a coaching position. You know, I read the to be honest, I don't even remember applying to the job. I just got the email for the interview and I was like, oh, this sounds great. Okay. And then, you know, I landed in the coaching job and I just thrived. I really learned how to apply my mindfulness-based training to these kind of, you know, subclinical issues that people were coming in with, which is just a lot of stress and anxiety, work-life balance issues, all of that. And compared with the coaches who worked there who didn't have a therapist background, I recognized that I had a lot more strengths in being able to see clearly who is appropriate for coaching versus who isn't, which is so important in reducing harm. You know, we're not doctors necessarily, but none of us want to do harm. And there, unfortunately, is just not as much training around understanding mental health disorders when you're not, you know, trained as a master's level clinician.
Right.
So having the experience of working as a therapist, I think really informs my practice as a coach and helps me to do it in a much more like ethically sound and meaningful way.
And I love that you're saying that too, because I think, well, human beings, right, can be very black and white. It's like mental health coaching is a no-go, but like not everybody's the same, you know, different intentions, different backgrounds, different abilities. Like, and so I love that. It's so true. So being with a background in therapy, having a master's degree in like makes me want to go get that degree. Like that sounds incredible. Like it truly does. Like Buddhist based, transpersonal, like spiritual work is incredible. Having that background and then working as a mental health coach, what do you think is the biggest mental health problem that we face as humans today?
There's so many different levels to this, right? Like kind of at face value, I'd be like, oh, it's stress and anxiety. But if we take a step back, it's like, well, what's causing that? And I think it's a lot of disconnection from ourselves, disconnection from each other. But again, let's take a step back. What fuels that? I think it's capitalism. I think it's, you know, the desire for money, power, and control over other people that is fueling our mental health crisis. You know, our society values money so much more than it values human beings, human life. Connection. Mm-hmm. We've just strayed so far from our true human nature, which is to be creative, to explore, connect, to love. And so it's no wonder that we have so much stress and anxiety and war and all of the issues that are impacting us all at just like this deep existential level.
It really is. Like it really does go to the core of existence. As I'm writing my book right now, I'm trying to come up with, like, we have like, you know, so many different psychologists have created a list of human needs, most notably Maslow. And I'm trying to sort of like create my own. And I'm taking a look at like basic human needs, which we know like food, water, shelter, sleep, sex, medication, right? To maintain the food, water that we put in our bodies. And you're right about like, okay, so we can have conscious capitalism. We can. There are aspects of capitalism that are wonderful, like innovation and creativity and competition. But it's those other aspects of capitalism, like not being able to meet your basic needs unless you have money, that fuels that really like capitalistic mindset and existence in general. And you're so right about needing play, creativity, community, rest. Yes. And if we're fighting for money, for our basic needs, we can't ever tap into the conscious human needs that we do have. Like, be it the fact that we are conscious beings means that we are hyper aware of our pain, on a different level. And so we need to acknowledge that and try to reduce the pain. And I think you're dead on that. The need and drive for money to survive prevents the need and drives of all of our other actual needs as humans.
Absolutely. You know, this phrase, like, to earn a living has been coming up so much for me lately. And I'm just like, oh, it's so painful to consider that we need to earn a living. Don't I just deserve to be alive?
Wow.
Enjoy it.
I never thought about it like that.
Painful to think about.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm just like frozen for a moment. Oh my God. Wow. Cause that's, and it's so like, and you just grow up with that phrase. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, what are you going to do to earn a living? And it's just like, it's so, we're so desensitized to the fact that that's like a really fucked up thing.
Somebody.
Cause you're like, I don't know. Like I'm 16.
Yeah. I didn't choose to be here.
Oh my God. That's really wild. Oh my God. Well, I think that, and an important thing is that both therapists and coaches can help address this underlying existential issue, because that really is what's at the core of it. Yes, there's genetics, but environment and experience turn those genetics on, and we live in a societal system. Coaching has to be an option because one, therapy is inaccessible. It's not always necessary to go see somebody that can, again, like help you in like a catatonic psychosis. Like you're paying money for people who know how to do that, you know? And like, if you're not going through that and you want like anxiety 101, like just help me get out of bed when my heart's pounding, you know?
Right.
Coaching can be such a more viable option. And, and I think that there's like a lot of confusion between like what therapists do and what coaches do just in general. Like I've had therapists that just did straight up talk therapy. It did not help me, but it's also because like I had a degree. It's like, I vent to my husband, you know, like I have a podcast. I could talk for days, you know, but that doesn't help me like process. And so what I've caught on to is that coaching tends to like avoid just talking and like can be far more actionable. Like, yes, talk therapy is helpful in some circumstances, talking in general, processing. But why do you think that coaches gear more towards not talking and are more actionable?
I think it's because in coaching, we want to help people make changes in their lives. And that's why people come to coaching. So many of my clients express like, oh, I've been with the same therapist for 7 years and it just feels like we're stuck. Or every week I just show up and I just complain about my life for a week and then I leave and I come back and do the same thing the next hour and nothing's really changed in my life. And so people come to coaching because they want to make changes. They want to do things differently.
Yeah.
And that's the power of coaching, is like, we're trained in the stages of change, the change process. Whereas as therapists, we're more trained to on one end, like the clinical side, it's to understand mental health disorders, how to diagnose and how to treat at a deeper level in terms of like processing and understanding the past, making sense of it, integrating it into your life now. All of that is very, very important. And not everyone needs that. Most people, I think, are, you know, what we'd say is like subclinical, meaning that they don't meet the diagnosable standards for a mental health disorder. And I think a lot of people too, a woman that I spoke to recently who's interested in coaching, she said, well, she's had so many barriers to accessing therapy that she started to think, well, maybe I don't really need it. Maybe I just need a lot of self-help. But guess what? Like, she hasn't done anything. She hasn't taken any action on that. Because, you know, and this is kind of a truth that I see between all helping professions, really, is that it's the relationship that heals. It's not
proven.
It's proven. Yeah. It's not like the strategies or the training, which obviously training is important, but being witnessed is what helps. Having someone hold you accountable is what helps. Knowing that there's someone there who is going to walk alongside you.
The connection.
Connection is what heals. And that's what we need so much more of in this world right now.
Yeah, it really is. Subclinical. You keep mentioning subclinical, and that's so important. And also the inaccessibility of therapy, because even if you come in subclinical to therapy, you know, maybe, and you want to use insurance, like, sure, we'll do adjustment disorder for a while, but like your insurance company is not going to buy that for very long. And we're going to be forced to diagnose you, even if you're subclinical. I mean, And the thing is, it's like, it's just, you can still need a significant amount of help, but you're just one symptom away from getting like a diagnosis that will allow your insurance to cover it. So it's just so messy, the whole system in general. And so like, I feel like that's also a benefit of like mental health coaching, is like, it kind of pulls out of that pathological, diagnosable, insurance-based model. And that's not like, obviously that's not me like talking shit on therapy. Like I owned a treatment center, worked in them, worked with diagnoses, gave diagnoses. I understand the importance of it. Mm-hmm. It's just, there are billions of people living on the planet and not everybody has clinical issues. And I feel like that's a huge part of it. Like everybody's like, you know, I must be severely traumatized for like X, Y, or Z. And it's like, no, like life is just in general difficult and you don't have to have major depressive disorder or bipolar disorder. Like the amount of people these days that are like, I'm not well, so I must be a diagnosis, therefore I must need a psychiatrist and a therapist. It's like, why don't we just take a step back for a moment, maybe do some mental health coaching, like just psychoeducation, habit formation, and maybe things will improve and you won't need your insurance company to forever have you diagnosed with like depression, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's all just spot on.
Yeah. It's so important. I feel like this is, I feel like, a very good question that people are going to really want to hear your answer on. And I think it's one of the things that implies, you know, when they say like, oh, like coaches just work with anybody.
Yeah.
That's not the truth. So have you ever had a client who ended up not being a good fit for coaching? And how did you know? And then what did you do?
Yeah. I mean, the answer is absolutely. And it's mainly though, when I was working as a corporate wellness coach, because I had little say over who came in to my caseload, you know, they kind of just took everyone, but it was pretty clear to me because I had the training as a therapist to see who was appropriate and who wasn't. So the main things that I pay attention to when I'm like screening, if someone is appropriate for coaching, is the level of dysfunction in their daily life. Are they able to take care of themselves? Are they eating? Are they taking care of those basic needs at the foundation of the pyramid, right? Are they eating, sleeping at a well enough degree, you know, that they're able to get through their life well enough? Obviously, there's going to be challenges with stress and anxiety and, you know, relationships, but I look for how much is it negatively impacting their life? Level of dysfunction. Some things also to pay attention to, obviously, are like self-harming behaviors, active addictions, active eating disorders. If someone's in an actively abusive relationship, those are all signifiers that this person is more clinically significant and they'd be much better helped by someone like a therapist, a social worker, case manager, psychiatrist, which is what my next step would be. So if I'm working with someone and I do realize, okay, they are at a more clinically significant level, then I can help them. Our work will be around securing those higher levels of care. So, and I want to support my clients in doing as much as they can of that process on their own, because that's empowering. It's not, you know, me saying like, here's what you need to go do. It's again, like a partnership. Like, do you think this would be helpful for you? Do you think working with a psychiatrist would be helpful for you? Do you know about psychiatry? Would you be interested in learning more? And kind of walking them through the process of how to access those higher levels of care, which, you know, let's be honest, is not always an easy thing to do.
No, it's not.
So we work on that. And then like kind of alongside that, kind of some just basic self-care things, you know, helping people to eat more food if they haven't been eating, or drink more water, try to get a little bit more rest, just like really incremental bits of self-care can make a lot of help as someone's trying to get really the help that they need.
Definitely. And I also think it's really important to mention that, like, even if somebody is dealing with something that you could consider to be out of your scope, as long as you know what your scope is and the things that you are addressing with that person, then you may still be able to work with them. The important thing is informing them that you will not be addressing issues X, Y, and Z, and that they need to be getting those issues addressed by somebody else. Like, even when I had my outpatient treatment center that was for substance use and mental health, if somebody had a co-occurring substance use, well, let's say tri-occurring mental health issue, substance use issue, and an eating disorder, we would admit them to treat their substance use disorder and their mental health disorder as long as they had a concurrent eating disorder therapists and psychiatrists that they were seeing. So like, and that's like another important thing, is like knowing how to coordinate care and collaborate with people around you. So, cause that might be scary for some people that are even thinking about getting into mental health coaching, because even how you started introducing yourself on this podcast was like, I'm complex. And so like, we're never going to be able to address all aspects of one person, but if we know that and tell them that and give them the resources to address all the other things going on, then mental health coaching can still be appropriate.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good sign of a good coach, right? Like when they know what their scope is and they stay well within those confines. I'm in some like coaching groups on Facebook, and I see some questionable things being put out there, you know, like, oh, I have a client struggling with, you know, XYZ, which I know nothing about. Could you all point me towards some resources? It's like, resources aren't quite enough. Right. You're not going to learn everything you need to learn about this thing just by reading an article. Like, you need to refer out or just stick to what you know with this person.
And it feels like this just is not a problem only in coaching. Like it's literally a problem across the board in every profession. Like how many politicians do we know are literally like voting on policy they know nothing about? Like everybody, like, and
lane people, stay in your lane.
You know? For reals, I think it's so important. You know, on the concept of lanes, which I think is super interesting, like lanes, barriers, like guidelines, restrictions, why do you think more therapists are becoming coaches these days? And that was kind of a little bit of like a lead-in question. But
Well, I mean, there are just so many reasons. So many. I mean, I think kind of off the bat, one is that just working in the public mental health system is very draining. You're often underpaid, overworked, undervalued, and put into, you know, some really difficult situations sometimes that you have little to no say over, you know, when you're just kind of given clientele that are not in your scope,
right,
but they need services and you work here, so you have to treat them. That's like so painful because it makes us stray from our integrity, but I need my job, so I'm going to do it.
I know, right?
Oh my God. Yeah, which is brutal. Another is like, well, it can just be really satisfying to work in coaching and to see people actually making changes in their lives versus maybe doing more like case management where you're working at the, you know, kind of base level where people are really struggling and they need a little bit more social work than maybe what you're trained in. Talking about myself. You know, there's all the issues with insurance, like you mentioned, that's such a pain in the butt. And you don't have to deal with that when you're a coach. You can be yourself a lot more in coaching. This is something that I'm like really breaking out of, is the idea of being a professional, right? And like, you need to, I remember in undergrad, they told us like, never put I in any of your papers. This isn't about you. And here I am. I had a boatload of trauma that I'm like, is like being actively triggered as I'm learning about all this stuff. And they're like, no, that's not acceptable here.
Yeah.
And that's why I went to this alternative type school, you know, Naropa, where every single paper was a reflection paper, you know, along with the clinical side of things. But then again, being thrust back into the public mental health world and kind of feeling like I had to put on a professional mask of some sort, you know, it makes me feel disingenuous. So I'm able to be a lot more myself in the work that I do as a coach. And that's a lovely thing. You know, it's so much more fulfilling to be able to feel more like myself.
It's so fulfilling. It's like, that's what we're trying to teach our clients, right? And that's the thing for me. Like when I was in school to be a therapist, I heard all that stuff too. It was like, be a blank slate. Like, it's not about you. Like, depersonalize the experience of what's going on between you and this other person in the room, and wear the cardigans and like use a soft voice and like all the things, so much so that I was like, I can't be a fucking therapist. Like, I can straight up, like, this cannot be the only thing that I do. So like, I became a clinical entrepreneur instead. And like, sometimes people are like, oh, like clinical and entrepreneur, like can't go together, like in the same, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, there's literal hospitals, like, give me a break, you know, like, you're just like, cause you're individualizing it. You're being able to place value or morality on me as a person. But it was just so much easier and more fulfilling for me to create centers and platforms instead that like informed that like these qualities of being a therapist that we're taught when we're in school, like, are not necessarily helpful. Like, I totally understand the reasoning behind protection for the client. So you don't confuse the client, protection for the mm-hmm. therapist. You can hold your own personal boundaries, not making it about you, not processing your own stuff in the room. I get all of that. And it's like, still, even when I say anything about like, well, yeah, like I share my stuff on the internet and like, then I, if my clients feel in any way that they want to address what it is, I know how to do that professionally. Like, what is it about what you heard about me? Like what came up for you? Like, I'm not going to talk. We don't need to talk about my personal details. You want to know them? Maybe it'll come up in a video at some point, but like, you know, you're not paying me to hear about me. And even if you are, just wait for a live or something. So it's free. But I feel like that's so important. It's like, that's how I felt. Like, I would do coaching. Now I work with creators that are like really struggling in this new field of like entrepreneurship and like mm-hmm. figuring out how to find a work-life balance for themselves. And I didn't want to go the therapy route because I'm like, the issue that I want to address is not what is your diagnosis and here's an intervention that can help you alleviate mm-hmm. your symptoms. It's like, it's more metaphorical. It's more symbolic. It's more existential. It's like, mm-hmm. if you're just dreading the fact that like, you don't want to go work in society at all and like want to try to find this new avenue, like I'm not going to, you know, there's no diagnosis for that. You know, and like, even if maybe you're having certain symptoms that I could even categorize as like a diagnosis, like it may just be because you're in this like crazy existential crisis. And I don't want to diagnose you with major depressive disorder. I'll tell you, like, you're probably depressed, like these symptoms, here are some solutions for the indicated symptoms, but like, it doesn't need to be pathologized. It doesn't need to become like commercialized medical bullshit, really. It can just be like, here's what I want to help you with, right? Human to human. Because again, that connection piece, like, that's why people think therapists are so fake, that we're paid to like be helpful, but the connection is real. It's like the barrier is the fact that you are a therapist giving me a diagnosis. Even if you are a human being just trying to connect with me, it just disappears in the field.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And what comes up for me as I hear all this is thinking just about how like the medical model has been applied to the human condition.
Yeah.
And right. It doesn't really quite work that way. You know, we can't just like I said in the, you know, earlier in our conversation about like mental health and all these, you know, health and wellness coaches, they probably are mental health coaches because just addressing physical health is mental health. They're all connected. It's all connected. And to just try to be so myopic about it, it's not doing it.
It's not. But we're in a good shift. We're certainly in a good shift, moving more towards just like a variety of options, from self-healing to mental health coaching to the medical treatment that we do need when we have certain severities. There's stigma, there's discrimination, there's myths, there's just like people's core beliefs that have been rooted for a while and things should be done one way or another. What do you think is like one myth about mental health coaching that you just would love to dispel that we haven't already talked about today?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we might've touched upon it already. I think one of the biggest myths out there is just that mental health coaches or life coaches are people who have little to no training and are just trying to make money off of pushing self-care. I see that a lot, and it's just not true. You know, I think there are some coaches out there who maybe, you know, they're jumping on this train and maybe they don't have the experience, they don't have the training in order to really give fully competent coaching to people, but across the board, that is not it. So many mental health coaches are like me. They started off as therapists. And so they have the training to be able to meet you where you're at and not just give you a lot of fluffy, you know, homework assignments about self-care.
Right.
It goes a lot deeper than that. So that would be what I would hope people could realize, that like, if someone's calling themselves a coach and you're curious about it, dive in a little bit deeper, look at their experience. I put a link to my LinkedIn on my like link tree on my bio.
I love that.
Take a look. Like, I have experience. I'm not just blowing smoke here. I can teach you how to meditate and like, that's it. Like, no, it's a lot more than that.
I love that. I love that so much. And as you were talking, the word curiosity was coming up for me as like what I really kind of want for me, my biggest takeaway that I got from you, and I'd love to hear like what you'd like to leave the listeners with too. Like my biggest takeaway from our talk is like to be curious, but like across the board, don't just assume that somebody with a title therapist is going to be what it is that you need. Be curious about their credentials and what their goals would be for you. And similarly, don't assume that a mental health coach is going to not be what you need. Be curious there also and ask questions. And if it is a therapist turned coach, ask why, because honestly, you know, if we're going to be nuanced, like there are going to be therapists that became coaches because they wanted less regulation. They wanted less boundaries. They weren't capable of like doing what was needed, and they still aren't. Mm. However, the majority, I believe, especially from all the ones that I've met, at least, so this is my experience, therapists turn coaches, they want more flexibility to actually be more helpful. The benefit is for the client, not for the therapist. So I think curiosity was my biggest takeaway. And across the board as humans, but again, basic needs versus conscious needs, we're told to not be curious. We're told to just listen and to just believe. Okay. So that's my biggest takeaway. What do you want the biggest takeaway to be for the listeners or for me?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway I want people to get from this episode is just to know that there are other options out there. Like if you've been struggling and have been wondering if you should see a therapist, or you've been in therapy for a long time and feel like it hasn't been helpful and wondering if you should switch therapists, but knowing how much of a pain it is to do that, there are other options. And mental health coaching is not just some floofy little thing that, you know, I'm just going to teach you about self-care and bubble baths and whatever. Like it's not that. It's still a very robust approach to learning more about yourself. You know, you can develop so much insight in coaching as well as in therapy. But in coaching, we're going to grab onto that and use it to fuel your motivation to make the changes you're ready for and that you've been dreaming about for years, probably, but haven't been able to take the action on yourself. So if that's you, you're ready to take action, coaching might be the way to go.
That was an amazing takeaway. Yes, there are options. And be curious about those options. Mm-hmm. If you're a coach, if you are a therapist that's thinking about becoming a coach, if you have ever worked with a mental health coach before, if anything resonated with you on this episode, please share it on social media. We need to get the word out. We need to be talking about these nuanced conversations, the truth about mental health coaching. Tag myself at @the_truth_doctor. And tag Alyssa as well. What is your handle so people can share the message and tag you?
I am at Your Wise Mind Coach.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. This was like, I'm bumping this up to be one of the earlier episodes to be released. It was such a great conversation. And I want people to be able to learn more about you and see what it is that you do and access your platforms and your information, everything you offer. So where can they find you and what is next for you?
Oh, well, thank you so much. This has been really, really, really fulfilling. So people can find me at my website, which is wisemindwellnesscoaching.com. Also on Instagram at @yourwisemindcoach. And right now I'm just hard at work building up my coaching business because for all the reasons we talked about, like, I want this to be my life. I don't want to have to go back to public mental health, and I want to be able to help people the way that I can best, which is really my focus is on helping people breaking free from anxiety, self-doubt, overthinking, helping people deepen their self-understanding, and really boost their intentionality in their lives through the power of mindfulness. So if those are things that people are interested in, my DMs are open. I'm really looking to make coaching more accessible. So I'm super excited about it and excited to connect with more and more people.
I love that. Thank you so much. Yes, our final segment. Oh my God, you're a human. What is one unapologetically human thing that you do?
For better or worse, I state my feelings and needs like pretty openly with people that I'm like, even just meeting, I'll be like very open and honest. And I've just spent too long disconnected from my feelings and needs. And it's only led to more disconnection from myself, from other people, resentment, and just like not anything good comes from it. So I've learned to just say, screw it. Here's what I'm feeling. Here's what I need. Can you hang or not?
I love that. Yeah, absolutely. First of all, no need to apologize for that. Everyone should be afforded the opportunity to do that and have it be well received. Even if you don't like what's being said, we should all be able to receive other people's emotions and feelings as long as they're not intentionally trying to hurt us. We are the only species capable of using language to express our feelings and our emotions. And when we retreat or disallow other people to do so, we are in essence taking away an aspect of their humanity.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and like we said earlier, humanity, like we want to be creative and connected. And so this is a way that I lean into that. And it's been helpful.
I love that. Thank you so much for coming on. This was an incredible episode and we'll definitely have to have you on again.
Oh, yay. Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Human First. Please subscribe, leave a review. It really helps with being able to keep this podcast free, and share it on your social media to help spread the message. Tag me at @the_truth_doctor. As always, I'm glad that you exist. See you next week.